the Dropping Dimes podcast, we have a very, very special guest. Joining us on today's show is award-winning Vancouverite filmmaker and director, writer, producer, and obviously co-star of Funny Big Country, Kat Jamie. Kat, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks, guys.
You just came out from another interview, so it's Oscars Day. It's inappropriate that you're busy
making
with
the rounds.
Today.
Yeah. Back. No, thanks. I'm excited to be on Dropping Dime, so thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming again. We're very excited. I'm just going to quickly tell a story on how I stumbled across you the very first time. I was heading to the Van City store on, was it Hornby, I think?
Yeah.
And
Dips.
Right.
And I was with my girlfriend. We were at the the NBA crossover event, and we were about to get to the store, and then you were sitting outside of Starbucks by yourself, and then I was walking by, and I was with my girlfriend, and I did a double take, and then I stopped on my tracks, and I was like, I think she's the director of Finding Big Country.
And local celeb double take.
And I was, I don't know if starstruck is the right word, but then my girlfriend was like, you should ask her for a photo for Dropping Dimes. I'm like, no, and I was like, I'll go. So she grabbed my phone and she approached you, and I was just like, I froze. So, and then you took a photo with us, and it was very, it was amazing, because then you said like, oh, you're Dropping Dimes.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, yes, I am.
Awesome. Yeah, no, because I obviously followed you guys, knew who you were. And it was cool. I totally remember, just because I was sitting there by myself waiting for, I think it was my cousins who had just landed from LA to go watch Finding Big Country.
Oh,
and then we were going to meet them at the Dipped event. And then, yeah, I saw you guys walking by. And anyways, yeah, thanks for saying hi.
No, thank you. That was an awesome moment, for sure. So before we get started and talk about Finding Big Country, which is obviously...
Nice jersey.
You know, why thank you. Yeah,
we're in the number 50, representing.
This podcast repping.
Yeah.
Finding Big Country. And my shirt here.
Oh, nice.
Evans designed this awesome shirt, which I will put them up on the website. Thanks, so that everyone can see them, because
they're dope.
Yeah.
Thank so you. Good.
Because awesome. Part of it goes to Night Hoops, right? Every time someone gets a t-shirt, it goes to a really good cause.
Yeah, youth basketball league.
That's for another episode, though.
Yeah.
So, Kat, obviously, you've done a lot of interviews about Finding Big Country. But before we get started on that, we want to tap into your basketball fandom.
Sure.
Because that's how it all started, right? With your love for this game. So, just the top of your head, what is your favorite Grizzlies memory?
My favorite Grizzlies memory. Oh, man. I would say there's so many. I feel there are two things that I guess I can say. I just remember that feeling of like walking into the arena. Like, you know how you're on the outskirts trying to find your section.
Right.
And then once you kind of pass that, like you're entering like, you're entering where all the seats are, and then you can start to hear the music, you can see the players, and like that feeling is like, I think, one of my favorite memories about the Grizzlies. But another favorite memory is when the Houston Rockets played. This is before Steve Francis came, and it was Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley was my most famous player that I saw.
Right.
And we had tickets, and we were like right above where the where the opposing team would like come in and out of the changing room.
Oh.
So that was so cool as a kid to be like that close
the tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. So
he didn't want to be a role model.
But it was so many. I mean, obviously, like Super Grizz was so much fun as well.
Yeah.
Just so many, so too many good memories.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Who was your all-time starting five for the Grizzlies?
All-time, oh man, okay, so.
Take your time, take
for
your
sure,
time.
Like, Big Country.
Of course.
I love Lou Edwards is also one of my favorites as a kid.
Nice.
Greg Anthony, there's too many, like, Sharif and Bibby, that's five already, I know, but, like, Dickerson, Filippo Lopez would also be on that list.
That's the Mount Rushmore of Grizzlies. That's awesome.
Yeah.
In Finding Big Country, you showed us like drawings when you were a kid of your signature shoe that feature your
birthmark.
And awesome. I think everyone at some point in their lives did something similar. But did you have a favorite shoe when you were a kid you wanted to cop?
That's okay. So my favorite shoe were the N1 Tai Chis.
Right.
That was like. But in terms, and then like anything N1 put out, like Skip to My Lou, I knew like Rafer Austin repped the N1s, Vince Carter repped the N1s.
Yeah.
Obviously, all the Jordan Space Jams were also a huge thing for me as a kid as well. But for some reason, the Tai Chis, those ones were like, I remember when they came out, my dad actually bought them for me. Thankfully, they made them awesome. Boy version.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was able to find my. I still have my red and white Tai Chis.
Oh no!
Yeah,
way.
Yeah. So I wore that all in. Those are the Carters. Oh. Yeah.
From the dunk contest, right?
From the dunk contest.
Yeah. Oh, those.
So good.
Those are rare.
Would you say
yeah.
Those are your favorite pair.
Those are my favorite pair of shoes. Wow. They've come back. Like yeah. Edwin brought them back, but it's all for got men's sizes.
Oh yeah.
So I like, yeah. It'd be so cool if they made it for girls as well. I think I should. Yeah, I should.
Under Armour did something for
Steph Curry.
So
yeah. True.
I think it's N1. We're sure we'll list. You guys are
yeah,
listening.
That's true.
It. Please get on it.
Yeah. N1. Yeah. Make some women's shoes. Tai Chis.
Did you guys watch the Nike? I completely off topic, but the Nike ad that came out today for like.
No.
Women's sport, it's amazing.
Oh, okay, sweet. Yeah. I have to go watch it when I get home.
It's powerful.
Really?
It's powerful.
Okay.
And they feature Sue Bird, Deanna Taurasi, like amazing basketball players. Wow. And obviously other Serena Williams and
major athletes. WNBA players?
Sue Bird for sure. Yeah. Deanna Taurasi. Oh, man. Yeah.
Have you seen her?
I would wish
you
could meet Sue Bird.
Sue Bird, in university, my dad and I would go to the go to Seattle because it's so close.
Oh, that's
Seattle
awesome.
Storm.
Yeah.
Nice.
But Deanna Taurasi and Sue Bird, for sure, top two.
Sue Bird is, I'm a point guard because, you know, I'm vertically challenged. So Sue Bird is by far one of my favorite players.
So good.
She's amazing.
Candace Parker, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liz Cambage from the Dallas Wings. She's also really good.
Yeah.
And, Brianna Stewart. She's amazing as well. So, Kat, do you remember what was your first and last Grizzlies game?
Oh, man. I feel like I was there for the last or the second last game. Okay. One of the two. And it was like, it was super. I feel like I was obviously sad.
Yeah.
Heartbroken. But I don't think I really realized what it meant that the team was moving. I think to me it was like, sure, they're leaving, but like they'll come back or like we'll get another team.
Right.
Like it's not but obviously they never came back.
I didn't grow up here, and the first time that I ever made it to Vancouver, the Grizzlies were gone. It was a year after they were gone.
Yeah.
And I was heartbroken because I was only here for a month. And I planned a trip a year in advance with my school back home in Mexico.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to see the Grizzlies. It was my first time gonna see an NBA team. And they were gonna, I was like, oh, come on.
Bad timing.
Yeah. Terrible timing. Did you have a similar experience, Evans? Like, when they left, did you realize that the team was gone for good?
I don't really remember that time when they were about to leave.
Yeah.
I remember, like, you know, early on and then during the season. But yeah, like, when they were leaving, that's why I was curious. One of the questions was like, how was the environment, if you remember, for the last game?
It was super eerie. No, it was full.
It was full. Okay.
Full, super eerie.
Yeah.
A lot of people crying, like a lot of kids crying, because it was like this. I think people were also confused. Like if you listen, I have the last game actually taped on VHS.
Nice.
And if you listen to the commentators, like it's still like. It's not 100% sure that they're leaving. It's like, it looks like, you know, will this be the last game?
Right.
You know, it very well might be, but, you know, maybe. Because there was like a Save the Grizzlies group. There were people trying to round up funds and money to save the Grizzlies.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. I mean...
Yeah.
As an immigrant, I've been here for a long time now, 11 years, but I mean, I remember when I got here, I knew about the Grizzlies, I knew they were in Vancouver, but it wasn't until, I'm going to dare to say, 6-7 years ago that they sort of became this pop culture icon. Like the jerseys, the 90s jerseys, or the 90s, early 2000s jerseys, the teal one. Made a comeback.
Yeah.
They were. It was a hot item to have.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And now it's even like it's crazier now.
I mean, one of my favorite things from Final Beat Country is when you approach a dude on the beach.
Shorts.
Yeah.
He totally knows what he was wearing. I think he was just trying to.
I hope so.
Didn't want to talk to me. Yeah.
I'm not trying to shame anyone,
but that was
shorts dude. You know who you are.
Yeah.
Come
on.
Calling him.
Oh man, that's too.
I'm
funny.
Calling him out a little bit. Yeah.
That always gets a good laugh.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But yeah, I mean, it's after I started learning more about the Grizzlies and their time in Vancouver, I think if you're in the basketball community here in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
it's inevitable. I'm a huge Lakers fan.
Okay.
Through and through.
Yeah.
But it's inevitable. You know, if you live in Vancouver, if you like basketball, you get into the, the Grizzlies memorabilia and everything that they meant to the city.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm even now upset that they left. And I wasn't even here for a single game.
Yeah.
But just the fact that, you know, living in Vancouver and meeting people like you and other people that were very passionate about it, it's it's upsetting how the team just left like that.
Totally.
And especially seeing how the Raptors...
Yes. You know, had
similar challenges. But that leads us to, you know, finding big country, right? The team is gone. This is more than 10 years than they left, and no one knows about big country. Obviously, the other players, they're somewhat relevant. They find jobs in the media, etc., etc. And everyone starts wondering, well, where the hell is big country?
Yeah.
Like this guy that was such an icon and. He just disappeared, like such a big person. How can he disappear? So, you know, what was your motivation for doing this film? Was it really finding big country? Was it something else? Was it something bigger?
So I guess you could say that in university, I wanted to make a film about the Vancouver Grizzlies that would eventually help bring a team back. Like that was like my goal. I want to help. I want to bring a team back. And how am I going to do that? I'm a filmmaker and I'm going to tell the story and it's somehow going to, you know, get a team back here to Vancouver. And then when I was doing my research, I stumbled upon an art, like I started finding articles that were like, you know, talking about the Vancouver Grizzlies and like all the players who played on the team. There's an article that's called The 62, Where Are They Now? Where they tried to hunt down all the 62 players that once played for the Grizzlies. And it was like one of the, Justin McIlroy wrote it. He's a Vancouver writer here. Journalist. And one of the last lines was like, something like, the only player that we couldn't track down is Bryant Big Country Reeves. And like, he's the only player that no one has been able to talk to, which is funny because Bryant is like, he's like the most iconic Vancouver Grizzly player, right?
Of course,
one of the three, at least top three. And I was like, what? This is so, really? No one knows where he is? And then started doing, looking more into it. And then I kept finding more articles that were like, and this is back in, you know, 2014. Because now you know, he was inducted into the Hall. Like, he's done a few interviews now, like in 2016. But from 2001 when they left to 2015, nothing on him. And so I was like, okay, like, this is my angle. Like, I'm going to find big country. So that was sort of like the genesis of the idea. And then I guess the more I looked into it, the more I realized like, hey, this guy was actually like, he was treated pretty unfairly. And he actually has an amazing story that, that pretty much everyone in Vancouver doesn't realize. And I, you know, and he's a guy who takes the most flack, who's, has become the scapegoat. But if you look at his story, he has an incredible, such an incredible story. And if you, you know, whenever, if you go to Gans, Oklahoma, you'll see what I mean. Like he's like the fact that he came from such a small town and made it to the, like the NBA, that's a huge feat. And then when you look at his numbers, like he's actually like, he's a pretty good player.
Skilled,
like, skilled player. But it was just that he, you know, he didn't look, you know, as the film says, like he didn't look like your typical,
superstar.
He didn't look like a superstar. He had an Oklahoman accent. Everyone thought he was like a country boy. And so they, you know,
which he was.
Yeah. And proud of it too.
Yeah.
But you kind of just dismiss him. But he's, you know, everyone I spoke to who worked with the Grizzlies, you know, they kept just saying, you know, A, he's the nicest human being. And like, two, he's like one of the smartest on the team.
Right.
And you can, you know, you look at the, like how he's, you know, managed his finances and like the fact that he has his own like company, like Circle R Ranch, like that's, you know, his ranching company. Like he's a smart dude.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and it's surprising from the film to see, you know, how prepared he is.
Yeah.
I mean, but anyways, let's move on. I don't want to go on, on a tangent here.
What or who was the starting point to find Big Country?
The starting point to find him? I guess it was, like, the fact that that no one had found him.
Right.
That I was like, okay, like,
that's...
challenge accepted. Like, I'm going to find him. And just knowing that people had tried and had come out short, that was just sort of like, okay, I'll be that first person to do that. And I, you know, when I realized there are moments, especially when I found, when I realized that this is sort of like the way that I was going to tell this story, and sort of, you know, and it was like, it was the perfect, you couldn't have written a better story. So for example, it's like the worst team in the NBA that was loved by like a little girl who like, whose dream was to become the first girl to play in the NBA. Then you have its star player who is, who became the scapegoat, disappear, and then have this little girl make it her life mission to like find him. Like that's like, as a, like you can't, everything just kind of align, and it's like kind of like the perfect narrative almost. And so one of my goals was, and you know, Bryant was my favorite player. That was also the other thing that was like, and so just knowing that this was my chance to redeem him, like try to like flip the narrative and really, like tell the, like show the truth of like what his story actually was. Like, so that was like a big, goal of mine as a filmmaker to like, okay, like I'm going to show Vancouver that we actually had a legend in our backyard.
Right. That's amazing. I mean, I remember from the film, you show yourself trying to make 1,000 phone calls. And I don't even want to ask you your phone bill. That must have racked up. I don't even want to know. Was there, you know, where did you decide to, like, I'm going to start from this, from this person? Or where did that tree start?
For sure. So definitely, I think it was like, I just started, media guides. That was the first thing. Like these media, the Grizzlies media guides. And then, how did I get in touch with, it was like, I got in touch with Noah Kroom, who is the assistant, assistant GM to Sue Jackson. And then Noah gave me like Debbie Butt and a few other people. And then Debbie was one of my first, Debbie Butt, who's in the film. She was the first person I contacted in Vancouver in 2015. So it was only in like 2 years later that I actually found Bryant. But she was like the first person that I like spoke to.
Could you explain who she was? Again?
Oh yeah, she was the media, the director of media. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, okay. For the Grizzlies. And then through my research, I found this article that Barry Trammell wrote on Bryant. And Barry Trammell, he's in the film. He's like he's a very famous sports Oklahoma sports writer. And I found an article that was like blah blah blah. I spoke to Bryant, who lives on the Arkansas River in Gans, Oklahoma, blah, 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 blah. So I was like, okay, like, here's someone, someone who actually has spoken, has interviewed him. The article was super old, but I was able to find his contact information, and then I sent Barry an email, and I was like, hey, you know, my name is Kat, I'm a filmmaker from Vancouver, I'm a childhood fan, trying to get a hold of Bryant, can you help me? So he thankfully, you know, shout out to Barry Trammell, like he he sent me an email that was like, here, call me tomorrow. I was like, oh, sweet, this is a, like, he actually responded. Get on the phone with them, and he's like, you know, Kat, like, I've been, you know, I see Bryant, like, I see him at like sporting events, and I've been trying to ask him for like to do a sit-down interview, take us fishing or sports writer fishing. And he says, sure, like, of course, here's my number, but he just, it's so hard, I can never get in touch with him. So he's like, so, you know, like, I wish you the best of luck, I don't think you're gonna get anywhere, but like, here are three phone numbers. And so one of those, I phoned all three, two people never called me back, but one person, Jordan Woodruff, who's in the film, he's Bryant's family friend, so he answered my call and was super, super nice to speak with. And he's the one who kind of opened all the doors and was like, here are like 10 people to call. And then all those people I had to like cold call, and everyone was like, here, you know, you should talk to this person, this person. So that's how I ended up getting Bryant.
That's amazing. I mean, and Jordan, now that you mentioned it, I remember on the first film, the first screening, I remember telling Rafa, like, I wish I could have I sit down and have a beer with this guy. He's got so many stories to tell other than Bryant, of course. But that's crazy. I mean, how do you feel when, you know, someone that has written about, someone that is in Oklahoma, first of all, someone that has contact with Bryant Reeves tells you, you know what, best of luck. Like,
I know, it was like, I was hoping that he'd say, like, you know, there might be a way, but he was like, I don't think so. Like, I wish you the best of luck, but like, I don't think you're going to get him. So it was like, again, it was there was a part of me that was like super confident, like I'm gonna do it, but then it was like, okay, but how? Like, but how am I gonna do it? And so there are moments where I was super confident, but other moments when I was like for sure doubting, like, oh my god, like why am I doing this? Especially like the night before I went to Oklahoma, when I didn't have Bryant, and I had spent 2 years pitching this project, and like convincing people, like, you know, give me money so that I can go do this project, because I'm gonna, like, it was like, I'm gonna find Bryant. Like, that's how I had to, how you have to pitch it, right? It's not like, give me some money or because I might find him, like, who knows, like, I'll do my best. But it was like, no, like, I'm gonna find Bryant. But the night before, I remember thinking, like, why have I been telling people I'm going to do this? Like, this is so, like, no one's telling me I have to do this. Like, I'm like, like, I'm putting this on myself. Yeah. But it worked, thankfully it worked out, so. Yeah.
At any point, do you ever think of giving up and maybe, you know, maybe trying a phone interview rather than...
No, like, I knew I had to, I had to see him in person.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's, then, you know, there's, it was interesting because I've realized, or I found out that there are a few people who've had this idea. Who are like, where's Bryant Reeves? And, like, wouldn't it be great to make a film and about him? But I think a lot of, you know, I'm not the only one who thought of this, but I'm definitely the one who persisted after hitting that first brick wall. Because everyone who's tried has like sent a few emails, got nothing, no response, and was like, okay. But I feel like I'm the only one who actually went to Oklahoma, and that was the difference between why, you know, I got him and some people, some others didn't get him.
And that was on your dime, right? This is all your initiative.
That was at first it was. But then, thankfully, Telestory Hive came in after I had got Bryant. And then that's when I was able to form a team.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, on the film, we see Bryant being obviously very happy and not only content, but satisfied with his life, his career.
Mm-hmm.
And his time in Vancouver, obviously, he gives a huge shout out to Vancouver, which I wish other NBA superstars can see that and stop complaining about playing in Canada. Is there any other takeaway that you wish people can get from your film?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's all... There's, so many different takeaways. One of the main ones, I guess, is, you know, the film is all about also, like, your failures. And, like, realizing, you know, that maybe things didn't work out the way they did for a reason, because something better was in store. So for me, obviously, it was, you know, I didn't make it as a professional basketball player, but I was able to morph my dreams and my passion for basketball into something else that I couldn't have done when I was a kid. But it was, you know, I would say even better than what I had dreamed of. And I think the same thing with Bryant. Like, he, you know, it takes a few years or months or whatever to get over not playing basketball anymore, but he was able to find like his new love with ranching and being a dad and a family guy.
Right.
So my hope was that people reflected, you know, on, you know, that first dream that they had. Like, you know, I'm sure a lot of us had dreams to be a professional athlete or whatnot. Oh, yeah. And there's, you know, there's only very few who can actually play at that high caliber. Yeah. So my hope is to, you know, make people reflect on their own journey and their own story, and hopefully have, you know, a better understanding of, and perspective of why things played out the way they did.
Right.
Yeah, you definitely captured it really well.
Thank you.
You know, I think the unofficial Dropping Dimes review for that is like, it's a story about good failure. Yeah. It probably doesn't make sense, but
it is, I like that. Know, yeah.
It's good failure from, you know, Bryant says like, yes, we never made it to the playoffs, but we did some great things
totally.
For the community.
And he got to live out his dream of playing in the NBA. Like, that's crazy.
He just played 6 years.
How
would have he done in like Memphis, right? We'll never know.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe he got off in a good...
It
just worked out for him, I guess. Plus he had all the back injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So
true.
It was a health thing as well. So
were you surprised? You know, I'm talking about the footage where you play one on one with him.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that he still had the moves?
He
said he hasn't played. He hadn't played
in like
years.
7 years.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, he still had a shot. Like,
yeah.
He
didn't lose that.
Yeah, he did not. And I guess like you're still dealing, like, no matter how, you know, how much that time has gone by, like, you're still dealing with. He's still an NBA. Like, he's still an NBA retired athlete, right? Like, he still has the moves. Thankfully, we got him dunking once, which is awesome.
Yeah. he still got the moves.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I was able to go to that very first screening at the Vancouver International Film Festival, and your introduction was
amazing.
That was
crazy.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
So you brought in Al Murdoch,
the
Grizzlies and the Canucks announcer, to introduce you to the stage.
Yeah.
And you know, with the NBA introduction, like from
wing. It was like exactly the way, because I found footage of him introducing the starting lineup. So I got exactly the same words and then just tweaked it to introduce me instead of obviously the players.
That must have felt
amazing. That was so crazy. That was like, that day was probably the best day of my life so far. Like, it was crazy to have him announce me and have like that music blaring, because it was the exact same soundtrack they did when the Grizzlies were announced as well.
That's surreal.
And then, and then everyone just like, it felt like a Grizzlies game. It felt like we were at a Grizzlies game. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And then it was so cool to have when Bryant, when we first reveal him, like when he sits on the chair, like the whole audience just erupted in like applause.
Yeah.
It was like everyone had just like seen their long lost heroes. Like, there he is. And it was crazy.
It gave me chills, honestly.
Yeah, that's
that moment where, you know, there's no music in the background and he approaches the stool.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the camera is...
You have to make the pan up.
That's amazing. It's... I'm getting chills about it.
Thank you.
So when you approached Al Murdoch, was that, you know, was he just like, oh, yeah, sure, no problem?
Yeah, well, he... I forget how I got in touch with Al, but he actually came out to... We had...
At Kits.
We kind of did this call out for, like, anyone has any stories or whatever, please come out. I don't remember. I feel like someone must have given me Al's contact information.
He just agreed to come out.
And then
and
I was
chat.
Like, hey, yeah, can
That's
you
awesome.
Like, can you come out? So he came out to Kits Beach.
That was pretty cool.
And then he did some voice thingies of like announcing Bryant on the spot.
It was pretty surreal.
Yeah, it was really cool.
He did bring me back too.
Yeah. He's like, I kept telling Al, I was like, you're the voice of my childhood. Like, this is crazy.
It was pretty surreal actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and then afterwards, like when we were doing the thinking of how to make how to make the premiere, you know, a bit more fun, and like who can we invite, and then I think it was my exec producer James, because I was like, what if we have Al introduce the film? And then my exec producer James Brown was like, no, why doesn't he introduce you? Like, we'll have like lights go down, like the music starts, he goes, like you come down from like high-fiving everyone. Like, we didn't go that far, but it was as soon as he said that, I was actually laughing so hard. I was like, this is the only way I will have the film shown, as if I'm introduced this way.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
It was crazy. It was such a cool I think Viv actually recorded the like, they have the audio from the recording booth night.
Oh,
and it is crazy. Like, it's insane.
How long is it?
I'm not sure. I can send it, if you guys want to listen to it.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah,
We can listen for your introduction.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, we were sitting on the same row as Kat that night.
Oh,
Rafael and I. Yeah,
oh, no way.
Yeah. She came in and I told Rafael, get the hell. She's important.
Any player outside of the Grizzlies that you would like to interview?
Oh yeah, there's one player that I'm like need to talk to. Still trying to figure out a way, but my mindset has been like, okay, if I can forget Bryant, I can track down another Kobe Bryant. No, well actually I would love to, I mean the Shaquille, Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan. Like, I want to talk to Michael Jordan about the time that he schooled us in the last 2 minutes of the game and broke all our hearts. Obviously those legendary players, but Steve Francis.
Oh,
I need to talk to Steve.
That would be pretty.
Steve, why'd you do this like that, Steve?
I mean, from a outsider perspective, it's just weird to see how, you know, a player is saying like, no, I'm not going to go. And I don't care if you draft me. Like, I'm just not going to go.
Yeah.
I personally sort of put a little blame on... There are so many circumstances around that, but Steve didn't help the case.
For sure.
But this is a chance. Steve Francis, if you're listening.
Yeah,
Steve. We have Kat here giving you a chance to redeem yourself. Take it, man.
Yeah. Come on. Let's hear it.
What about women in basketball. Is there, we talked about Sue Bird and Deonna Taurasi and Candace Parker. Is there a WNBA player, coach, or anyone that you would like to interview for a film or something like that?
There's so, like, definitely, I mean, Sue Bird would be for sure, like, top. Because that's she's someone that I grew up with watching in university and following, and you know, championship player and whatnot, and I think she, and I'm a point guard, and she, you know, I think I wish that WNBA had been more prominent when I was a kid. I'm like super stoked that the league is doing so well now for that younger generation. Because as a kid, I think they were just starting, but there was no way for me to watch games, or like there's no internet, you know what I mean? There are no highlight things that you could like search for, and so I think that's why so I think that's why I really, you know, want, I wanted to be the first girl to play in the NBA versus like wanting to play in the, I wanted to play in the WNBA later, but it was first like the NBA, because that was, I mean, it was in my hometown, but that was like the. It was way more prominent, and I feel like now it's not necessarily the case, which is super, super awesome.
It is awesome to see that even NBA players have sort of that support for WNBA players. Yeah. And you know, if you like basketball, you must enjoy those games. I mean, they're amazing.
Totally. Yeah.
Shout out to the Sparks as well.
Lisa Leslie.
Lisa Leslie.
Oh yeah.
She's old timer. She's gonna be a coach for Big 3 now.
Is she really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Oh man, second, I need to go.
Second female coach for the
league. Yeah, because Nancy Lieberman, she won with.
That's awesome.
The power.
Yeah. Did you think it would become the, or it would become the pop culture phenomenon that it is now?
Finding McKenzie.
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool that you said that, it is definitely. I didn't. Like, I knew it was gonna, I knew there'd be an audience for this film. So when people, you know, when I was pitching and a lot of people said no to me, I was like, man, like, you don't know what you're saying no to. Like, I know that there's an audience for this.
Nice.
But I was like completely blown away by the reception and the response. And, you know, I feel like this is definitely, you know, hopefully one of the iconic like Vancouver films to be made about the city, and so that's really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah.
I mean, we were, Vince and I were quickly making a timeline of, you know, from the moment from the first public screening to now.
Yeah.
And you know, the conversation about the Grizzlies has picked up tremendously, because from going to other events, I know there's a support group to bring the Grizzlies back and. They've sort of gained and lost momentum, but you definitely brought the conversation back in ways that, at least from my perspective, no other group has.
That's awesome to hear.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I think all other groups can now rally behind you.
True.
And not only support your project, but, you know, take that and
for sure.
Do their little own movements, right?
Well, thank you for saying that. Like, that's, it's been really cool to see, the community come together, and to see, like you said, like that the conversation has definitely started, which is so cool. And like, I'm super humbled by it. And I think, it's so cool just to be a part to somehow weaseled my way into the Vancouver Grizzlies, like dialogue is pretty surreal.
I mean, we wouldn't be sitting here.
Yeah,
it just goes to show.
I'm pretty sure you might have seen that Las Vegas now has a line for the Pelicans that they might move in 2021.
Yeah,
and Vancouver is up there with Seattle.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I do attribute a lot of that because of your work and the conversation that
you were able to
bring up, and with other NBA players that I'm sure have seen your documentary, right?
Yeah. It was funny because for this next documentary that I'm working on, I was able to get in touch with Brian Winters, who's our first NBA coach for the Grizzlies. And I reached out to his daughter on LinkedIn because we went to the same high school, LFA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I messaged her and I was like, hey, like, you know, my name is Kat. I directed this film called Finding Big Country. Here's information about it, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, is there any way you think your dad, I would love to speak to your dad. And her response is like, hey, Kat. Super funny because like my whole family has watched Finding Big Country.
That's amazing.
So it was really cool to hear that that they had all like heard about it and watched it already. But so, super funny. I was actually, I forget, I was speaking to a vintage collector recently. Knobs, do you guys know?
I don't know.
He's another Vancouver Grizzlies collector. And he was like kind of saying like, you know, after finding Big Country, like, prices have gone up for Grizzlies. He's like, right. So he's like, yeah, like, prices have gone up for, like, Grizzlies. Yeah, I know. Like, I'll send over my wire information through Dropping Dimes. But I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was the week that Finding Big Country premiered, there was a jersey exactly like the one that you're wearing right now that was selling on Main Street for, I'm pretty sure it was like $15,000.
What? No way.
It was so funny because everyone was talking about
the buzz.
The buzz was just
too real. I mean, if I could just share the big story on this jersey.
Yeah, yeah. Did you buy this for $15,000? No, I wish.
If it was Lakers, then maybe I would have dropped it. Yeah. No, but the days before, I already had the tickets to go to that first screening at the Elizabeth Theater.
Yeah, the Playhouse.
And Loose Change, who you interviewed from Loose Change. My girlfriend used to live very close to that area, and I had already been to Loose Change. I have like 4 choices from them. Shout out to them.
Yeah.
And on Instagram, they posted this jersey, this Big Country jersey that I'm wearing right now. And I DM'd them right away, like, is this still available? They were like, sure, but you have to come and get it, otherwise it'll be gone. And I think it was like $50, not even that.
Yeah.
I took a cab because I was like, I'm not spending any time.
That's awesome.
I live here on the West End already. But I took a cab and I was like, I need it for the day of the show.
Yeah.
So really it was $100 jersey.
Ironically, the day of the show, I was living with Raphael still. We were already planning on going. The fire alarm went off on our apartment. So everyone had to evacuate the building.
So you couldn't wear it?
I couldn't wear it. I was not able to go back. God. I had my Grizzlies t-shirt on and a light jacket. So I was freezing in line, but I was like,
Oh my God.
I took a cab and everything and I couldn't wear it.
That's awesome.
I did wear it for the Rio though.
Yeah.
But
that's a good story.
It's stupid fire alarm.
But I'm glad you got it. I'm glad that you were able to get it. Like, because usually, sometimes when I see things on, Loose Change, I love that store. It's awesome. But whenever I see Grizzlies things, I'm like, I show up, they're like, oh, sorry. I was like, what? Yeah. You just posted it like 3 hours ago. Like, you got to be on it now.
It's a hot item.
Yeah, it's great. But you know what's so funny is that, I'm not sure if you know this, but when the Grizzlies were here back in the day, like, everyone hated our jersey.
Yeah, they, you know.
Like, they thought it was like the ugliest jersey.
Attached with the losing too, maybe.
True. But now,
but
like now it's like the in thing. Yeah.
It is. There's another podcast called 99% Invisible. Yeah. It's about design, and they have an episode on jerseys.
Okay.
And they interview the guy that designed the Raptors jersey. I don't know if it's the same person that designed the Grizzly jersey.
Yeah.
And the Hawks and Bucks jersey, which if you remember, like the fade out, the gradient. And the cartoon hawk and all that.
And he said,
that's, I loved it. But then this person interviews other people and say like, that's hideous. It's horrible. And he mentioned the Grizzlies and said like, look at the Grizzlies now. Like, if you go to the Pacific Northwest, everyone wants it.
Yeah.
And back in the day, it was considered hideous.
Yeah. It's interesting, hey?
Yeah.
Oh, fashion.
Yeah.
It comes around.
Yeah. Full cycle. Yeah, so we've noticed you've done a lot of community outreach recently.
Yeah.
You obviously through the film, you know, got to go back to talk, you know, at your school and share your experiences. How's that been like?
It's been really cool to like, I mean, that's another thing that I'm super passionate about is like, I used to be a basketball coach before.
Nice.
I used to work at the National Film Board of Canada.
Nice.
But I couldn't coach because it was a 9-to-5 job. Right. And
just didn't have the time.
Yeah. So I coached when I was when I was in university. I stopped when I worked full time. When I left the NFB, I tried to coach. There was 1 year that I did coach, but that was when I was pitching Finding Big Country, and I ended up missing so many games and practices, and I haven't been able to get back to it. So it's been really cool to be going back to elementary schools and high schools and using Finding Big Country as like a way to talk about failures and passions and dreams and and just showing like the type of, you know, athlete that you know you can be, which is Brian Reese. I think he's a great role model for kids. And so it's been really cool to and actually it was really cool is that there was one of my friends who's a teacher, and I spoke to her class. She sent me like a screenshot of they're writing like a fiction stories.
Yeah.
And one of the lines, this person, I'm not sure if it was a boy or a girl, but the student was describing one of the characters in their story that they had made, and it was like, she was so tall, even as tall as Bryant Bekenchi Reeves, and then in brackets it was like, who was like the Vancouver Grizzlies superstar when they were back in town. So it's like, it's like now that they, I think they were in I think they're in grade five, so like, so kids who like had no idea who the Grizzlies are, had no idea who Bryant Reeves, because of the film, are now like, they know who everyone is now, which is like super awesome. That it's sort of being being like re-injected into you know, our culture and like Vancouver's story, which is great.
It's awesome that you're reframing that story. You know, in younger generations that are not biased like us, right, with the record and all that. That is amazing that you've been able.
The fact that we had a team and we had like a so star player.
And from the Grizzlies organization, from you know their inaugural season to the end, who is next on your list? Who would you like to track down and say, like, you're next?
So for the Grizzlies or anyone else?
The Grizzlies.
Oh, the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies. So, so Mike Bibby was on my list.
Yeah.
And then Sharif is next.
Oh,
so Sharif is next.
He's a busy guy, though,
He's a busy guy.
President?
But he's a president of the G League. But you know, I've spoken to Sharif, and he's on board with this next project. So he's... So we just need to figure out a time to and a place to meet up. So hopefully, I think he's based in New York. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's the
New
next.
York trip coming up.
Yeah, nice. New York trip coming up.
That's fun. So Finding Big Country is still very successful, but what else do you have in store for the Grizzlies fans out there?
So now we're working on the feature length documentary about the Grizzlies, which is what I always wanted to do. Like, I always wanted to tell the full story, but with the amount of money and time that we had to make to deliver this film, Finding Big Country just became its own thing.
Yeah.
But I always knew I wanted to make tell the full story. Finding Big Country is actually only supposed to be like a 20-minute short film, but in the editing room, it just took a life of its own, and then we were just like, okay, we'll make it the length that it needs to be, which was ended up being 43 minutes. So I guess the next thing is getting another team back. That's always the ultimate goal. But working on this next feature film, which tells the whole story of what actually happened, because like I'm still not 100% sure of like why did they leave, like what were the things that led up to that moment when they were shipped off to Memphis.
So that's sort of like the goal, to find that answer.
And to really show that we, you know, I feel like by doing that, we can really make a case for why we deserve a team back, because they were taken, you know, pretty unfairly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I have one last question, Kat.
Yeah.
And this is more of a premonition / question.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that the Grizzlies are gonna come back.
Yes.
Because of your work.
Thank
you. And you're gonna be part of the organization. I'm calling it.
Okay.
What is gonna be your job with the Grizzlies?
Man. Hype girl? I don't know. Like, number one fan? I have no idea. That would be, dream come true if a team were here and I got to be a part of the organizations in any capacity.
Honestly think that's the only way to go from now on. Yeah. Like, you have to be part of the organization when they come back.
I'm just going to retire my career as a filmmaker, and I'm just going to be 100%. Hey, I'm okay with doing that if I get to... That'd be, we so need a team. And I want a team back for many different reasons, but the main one is for the younger generation. Like, it was so important for me as a kid to have that, to see that, you know, to be able to, you know, do my homework and then, like, okay, there's a game that's either on TV or there's a game at GM Place that I can go to. And, it was such a cool thing to just see these high caliber athletes, like, you know, just in your own backyard. And basketball is for sure the main thing that has shaped me into the person I am today, into the filmmaker I am today. Like, everything that I learned on the court has translated to me as a directing as a filmmaker. And so I want that for this next generation of basketball players here in Vancouver.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Head of storytelling for the Grizzlies, how's that?
Sorry?
Head of story.
Yeah,
Jones
hey!
Grizzlies.
Yeah. That's, all right, yeah, I've made my title. Position. Yeah, there you go.
Future Grizzlies GM ownership.
Yeah, yeah. Future GM.
You are welcome.
Yeah, yeah.
You're welcome in advance. Kat, how can people support your projects moving forward?
For sure. So you can, you know, Find Me Country is online now. So you can watch that on YouTube. Share that with, you know, your network community. You can follow us on social media at Finding Big Country on Facebook, on Instagram, Finding Big C on Twitter. And then sign up for our newsletter for updates for upcoming screenings and also for more information about the next film that we're going to be dropping soon. Dropping Dimes, dropping the next film. Yay!
When is the next screening? Because I know you just came back.
Oh, yeah, the next. So
that was been a cool
yeah,
trip,
that so. Was so cool. We just played at Powell River. We have some like local BC. We're playing in Kamloops next month,
nice.
And then two screenings in April.
So
In Victoria,
continues.
Yeah, and then we just got in. We're playing in Sacramento,
oh, that's
and
cool.
then
wow.
in New York in October. So yeah, so it's still ongoing, and then nice. Still waiting to hear back from festivals. Or what we've also been getting is people requesting the film, and then we try to set up a screening at either like a theater or a school. So yeah, so
that's
reach
awesome.
Out to us and.
Wow.
And yeah, we'll try to get as many people watching Finding
yeah.
Big Country.
Spread
that's
the word.
Awesome.
Spread the word for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kat, I have nothing to say, but thank you so much.
Thank
you for the film. It was
yes.
truly inspiring.
Thank you.
Whether you're a Grizzlies fan or not, this is a must watch as a basketball film,
yeah.
As a documentary, as an inspiring story.
Thank
so
you.
So thanks for everything, and thanks for obviously coming to Dropping Dimes.
Of course, no, thanks so much for having me. It was a blast.
Thanks.
Woo-hoo.